From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carl from the BFF. Keon. Keon, how was your week?
It was great. I didn't know her starting, but...
Oh,
I bet. Usually when you change your like tone, that's how I... It really lets me know. My week was so good. There's so much happening around everywhere all the time. And it really never ends. And just keeps going.
Definitely keeps going. Yeah.
And time. I don't think anything really happened for me this week. I don't think I did anything that was that anyone would call fun except me. So I have nothing to I continue to have nothing to share about my life. How about you? How was your week?
It was good. It was a busy week. We had a Bitcoin Builders Club on Monday with Brandon Keys. Then we had what else happened this week?
That was great. You did a good job. I told you your interview, yeah, Brandon, was good.
It was really good. Who else do we have? And then just still kind of fixing up the lab a little bit. We have a couple things done. And then, it's just really busy. And then last night I saw Avatar 3.
Right.
I dropped my review on Stacker News.
I don't know
if you read it or not. But
I did read it.
It was very...
You didn't have many spoilers. You warned about spoilers and I was afraid.
I was like, totally spoiled.
Was it kind of like squinting as I went through it, hoping I wouldn't get a big spoiler? But you didn't do a big spoiler. It's just kind of like a layout.
I think other people have reviewed it in a different way. I think I was just reviewing it as the story and the just how it fit in the whole trilogy or whatever. I read this morning, though, after I had written it. I'm glad I didn't read any of the stuff, whatever. But I read this morning that they're not going to do 4 and 5 until like 2030 or something, which is ridiculous.
Mm.
Yeah.
When did they release 2?
Like 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, like 2 years ago. So he's been working on it for like 30 years, dude. Just
Avatar?
Just Avatar, yeah.
No, I don't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, he must have big plans for it.
Yeah.
But it's a lot, it's a lot of big blue aliens in just the span of 2 years.
I mean, for 30 years. Imagine just doing one thing for 30 years.
I mean, they should be really good, but it sounded like you were kind of not.
I don't want to spoil it. Don't spoil it for people that are watching this because they might want to go see it. So you have to read the post. It's Stacker News. It's there. Other than that, it was just a good week. It was just really fast. Everybody's out of town.
It's kind of, well, I don't know if maybe Austin itself kind of clears out on holidays, which is kind of nice. And the lab is sort of empty.
Yeah. Yep.
But not completely empty. We still got space, Ted.
Topher's in there somewhere.
Qualified Ted.
If you've never seen this crazy show before, we're going to talk about all the top stories on, well, not all of them, the top 3 top stories on Stacker News Live. If you want to check out the YouTube channel, it keeps getting, I don't know why people keep subscribing. Like, this is ridiculous. At this point, you guys need to unsubscribe. Like, this is not good. We're gonna have to start watching what we say. We're gonna start getting paid by the YouTube people. It's gonna be bad. This is how shows get bad. Is the more popular they get, the more it just goes down the drain. Just remember this. I said this.
How many subscribers do you think we need to get invited to like a WEF, like Davos type thing?
I don't think we're that far. Probably another 500.
Another 500. We'll go. We'll pay our way.
I don't want to go to the WEF.
Really? You wouldn't interview Klaus Schwab?
Dude, I got invited to the Satoshi Roundtable. Remember I told you? I don't want to go to that.
Dude, podcast from Epstein's Island.
I don't want to go to
that. We have this green screen. We should do that. That's what would be our background.
I don't want to do that. Anyway, check out the YouTube. There's a lot of videos. Wumbo's doing a lot of really cool videos here. Turns out last week, the most popular video was the Gen Z Retro Tech. And we even got a comment that we're going to talk about later. So stay tuned for that. Mm. But a lot of cool stuff. He's clipping them. And with that, let's jump into the top three stories this week. The number three top story is banks and strategy, because that's what strategy is. From Bloomberg, Matt Levine. From Den, 12 comments, 1,387 cents. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, I learned some things on this one, as I usually do from these Den posts. Den Lillipon, I think is how you might say it. He covered Matt Levine this week. Matt Levine, I think, this is like a weekly newsletter where Matt Levine picks out a bunch of articles that he likes and shares them. He shared two stories from it. The first one is about how banks aren't really the main people loaning money to businesses anymore. And instead, it's more common, I think, now, or at least it's a growing trend that private firms, hedge funds, I don't know, other groups of like non-bank financial entities are who provide loans to other businesses. And then, so what is the bank? What are banks doing with all their money that they're getting in terms of deposits if they're not loaning it out like how we're used to them doing? Well, they're loaning it to these non-bank financial firms. So the new banks, or the people who are serving the purpose of banks, get loans from the old banks to be able to do their new banking activities. And one of the reasons they're able to do it a little more easily, or maybe more economically, is because they're not regulated like a typical bank is. And so it's kind of a weird like shell. There's like a shelliness to this, where regulations have created like an arbitrage for private entities capable of getting bank loans to take that money and then loan it out to people in the economy. Right now, I don't think there has been any. There's some arguments to be had about. Or arguments to be made that this actually is less risky in many ways than banks doing this more directly, because banks are kind of shielded maybe from, defaults on the loans in a way, because the private entity is sort of in front of them. But I'm not certain that's true.
Is this the same thing as like credit default swaps and? Or is it not that bad?
It's reminiscent, because it's like it's like layers where. It's actually harder to gauge risk, like as risk travels through layers. And so you can be a domino very far down the line and not see like all the ones collapsing towards you. Versus if you're, if you are the only domino, you can kind of see the finger coming to knock you over.
Yeah. So it looks like they actually made the Dodd-Frank Act in the US. And it almost seems like that was supposed to reform a lot of this stuff.
I forget.
Interesting.
I forget what Dodd-Frank did specifically, but I know it was talked a lot about during the political election.
It said it was aimed to be transparency, competition, and standardized rules to the derivatives market, many of which have been absent since the market's emergence in the 1980s. It was all because of the equity swaps in 2008, it looks like, and the credit default swaps.
Okay, response to that.
And then it was like a systemic risk. But remember back then, that was like $700 billion. It wasn't even, compared to now, it's not even a lot of money. It's kind of wild.
No, I think it was less than like half of one of the stimuluses. Like
The near collapse of EIG, which had written over $500 billion in CDSs, necessitated a massive U.S. government bailout to prevent a complete economic collapse. Wild. Let's see.
Then he also covered like the evolving strategy of MicroStrategy, where Matt Levine kind of educated us on the reality of MicroStrategy's situation, and that they were selling $1 of Bitcoin for $2 on the stock market for a long while. And, he warned us that the premium would eventually collapse as this went on long enough. And it appears to have done so. And so now, but it appears Strategy is still able to make a little bit of money on this trade. They're selling $1 worth of Bitcoin for about a 10% premium to the market. And so, the strategy isn't completely bust, but it is not as lucrative as it once appeared, and that might just be the reality of today. And maybe, you know, it goes one way or the other in the future. But
yeah, and you're seeing a lot of people, no names. We've seen a lot of people in this space who launched these treasury companies over the summer, and now they're like, oh, we're gonna have these services, and we're gonna do something with that Bitcoin. It's not just gonna be
Yeah, they're pretending now that they actually have
a business.
Yeah, a business, because before it was all the rage to be like, Strategy is old and dated because they have a business that they have to support in addition to their treasury. And you see a lot of the people starting these new treasury companies, and they pivoted away from that, and they're like, no, we're a very serious Bitcoin company. We have these. We're going to do these Bitcoin services and products. They're very complicated. They're too hard for you to understand. They're so new and so revolutionary. Like, I was literally quoting someone a Bitcoiner who was running one of these on CNBC. That's kind of what he was telling the people who asked him what exactly he's doing. He's like, it's so revolutionary. You guys won't get it. You guys just won't. It's like, it sounds exactly like a lot of the altcoin founders and CEOs back a few years ago, where it's all just baloney, and they're just kind of, they're trying to rob you and convincing you you're contributing actually some technological paradise that they're going to create.
Well, I mean, the great thing is there's this whole segment of the ecosystem that is bought into that narrative, and whether you like it or not, it's going to happen. So that's a good thing. The good thing for the stackers who are listening to this is they can see through a lot of that BS. And if you're really serious about stacking Bitcoin, you just go ahead and buy it, turns out. So,
yeah. Please don't get caught up in these treasury companies.
Scoresby had the top comment. He said, this has been coming up a lot for me lately. Society passes onerous, complicated regulations that causes market distortions. Then society bemoans the market distortions. The way Levine talks about banks made me see a contrast with insurance that I hadn't seen before. Banks have on-demand deposits. Insurers have on-catastrophe deposits. In general, insurers seem to have been able to work out the probabilities on how frequently they will need to pay out. What is it that banks couldn't do the same? Oh, good stuff. Yeah, I think we talked about this at length. Ready to move on? The next top story this week was, what other rabbit holes have you fallen into? This is from Jason B. 63 comments. $3,295. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so Jason B. has a rabbit hole of their own, it appears. They're really into, I don't know what you'd call this field exactly. I think it's like ancient civilizations or, you know, sort of Graham Hancock stuff that I really like. I've never gotten into it this deep. I don't have books on it or anything, but this kind of lost civilizations, I think, is maybe the usual term used to describe it. And so I was wondering if stackers had their own kind of thing like this, where, you know, we're all kind of pretty interested in Bitcoin, and maybe we found a similar magnitude of interest in some other area, and it'd be kind of cool to learn that about each other. So a bunch of stackers chimed in. And yeah.
The top comment was from Optimism. He said, thanks to Bitcoiners copying the gold bug sound money narrative, I've fallen into that rabbit hole trying to find out what exactly
Bye, Ted.
Went on prior to 1971. Basically, how did the gold standard fail? Yeah, that's a good one. We always talk about that guy Maloney. He has a whole series on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The gold bug guy?
I jumped into that hard in like 2015, 2016.
That is a good a good series he has there. But I don't know. I don't think it explains definitively why it failed.
Yeah, but it goes into the Roman collapse and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it goes into like why.
Stuff that you didn't teach you. I mean, at least I didn't learn in school.
It goes into like why generally gold standards fail. But it doesn't answer what exactly happened in 1971, I think, is what Optimism is kind of looking for the answer to.
Yeah. And then, of course, we had the Arctic exploration rabbit hole. I guess he's talking about that guy who was a general or something, and he went out to the Antarctica and, like, what did he do? I forget that guy. What was that guy's name? Um, I think it was in the 1940s or something.
I think he might be talking more generally.
Operation High Jump. Mm. Yeah, this is feeling like a Joe Rogan podcast. But yeah, Operation High Jump. Largest Antarctic expedition ever. Establishing Little America for training personnel, testing equipment.
Turns out organized
by Admiral Richard E. Byrd. Yeah, 4,700 men, 13 ships, and 33 aircraft. Imagine that.
I'm sure Scoresby knows all about that. But yeah, it does seem like a lot of our rabbit holes are opened up by Joe Rogan based on this. But I would guess
he's the king of rabbit holes.
I would guess Scoresby got into Arctic exploration on his own.
And then we got into a rabbit hole on The Thing because The Thing takes place in Antarctica. There's a group of us talking about The Thing, and that was a rabbit hole in itself inside the rabbit hole, which was kind of cool.
I don't imagine there were any rabbits in Antarctica or the Arctic. Maybe there are. No, but there are snow rabbits.
Are there?
Yeah. White rabbits. There are rabbits. I watched the show Alone, and the rabbits, when winter hits, they turn white.
They start off brown.
Yeah.
Is that crazy?
That is pretty cool, right?
Yeah. And then you said you had like a whole list of things. Are you sure these just weren't hobbies?
I think you might call those just hobbies. Maybe I think I just might be so ashamed. I don't have a proper rabbit hole. I just had to make a bunch of, I just had to list all my hobbies out. I think you just listed
hobbies. It's probably true. When I saw that, I was like, this is just a bunch of hobbies.
It's hard to tell what's a hobby and what's like
a rabbit hole is when you like, you don't
consumes your life.
Yeah. It consumes your life for at least a week.
It's like an addiction where it has to hurt your, like, your ability to live a little bit.
Yeah. I used to get into creative rabbit holes, all sorts of creative rabbit holes, not like that, but like people or,
sound like hobbies to me, Carr.
No, it was in the creative bubble, but it was just rabbit holes in the creative bubble.
Mm.
If that makes any sense. I've written a lot about it on Thriller. But yeah, I would get into it for like a week. Or I'd get into like music rabbit holes. Or just listen to like one band for like a week and listen to the lyrics and stuff like that. Really don't have that many rabbit holes I get into, to be honest.
That's hard to... I lack the level of commitment to...
Yeah. I don't know. Do video games fall as rabbit holes?
No, definitely not.
Okay. It's like, I definitely get into like a video game rabbit hole.
We're in the cocaine rabbit hole. It's like, no, you're just an addict, bro.
You're just an addict. Yeah. Definitely get into a video game rabbit hole if that's such a thing, but maybe not. Cool. And then Justin Shuckton said, blacklisted by history. Have you ever read that before? I can't say.
No, I know Justin Shocknet's rabbit hole might be psyops. I think he's mentioned how he's
he's
psyop spectator.
His football is politics, basically. He likes looking at all that stuff.
It sounds so stressful, but I bet you got
some people
used to it. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, great post. The number one top story this week is the true and accurate history of HODL. This is from Scoresby, 15 comments, 13,400 cents. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so this, I guess, yesterday marked the anniversary of this post by Game Kyuubi, I think is how you might say it, where we get the term HODL from. But they posted on the Bitcoin Talk forums about around the time that Bitcoin's price was crashing because there was an unintentional fork. In Bitcoin, I think the year was around November of 2014, was it?
Mm-hmm.
I can't see the post anymore. Let's see. Yeah, December of 2013. And I think the unintentional soft fork was in November of that year. As I didn't know that. I haven't done much Bitcoin historying. But Scoresby does it here. In March of 2013, on the 11th, BIP50 caused a chain split, and there was a 24 block reorg. So, which is a big reorg. We pretty commonly have one or two block reorgs, but I think as far as large reorgs, that might be one of the bigger ones. Which is pretty bad for Bitcoin. That means anyone who spent money on those 24 blocks. Or anyone who accepted money on those 24 blocks basically might not have received it unless it also ended up on the other chain. So it suggests that maybe Bitcoin won't succeed. And so Bitcoin's price crashed, and then Game Kyuubi wrote his famous I'm Hodling post, which has a bunch of fun facts in it. Like, I think it's his girlfriend went to a lesbian bar. You know, and he bemoans not being a great trader because there are probably, I guess, on these boards in this day, people would brag about when they got in and when they got out, and you know, how they're moving into one position and another. Anyway, very famous post, and we all kind of use the term hodl. And then Scoresby tries to trace why Game Kyuubi started using the term hodl, or even tried to make a post about holding. And it seems like he was inspired by a Zhao-tongued Billy Joel cover called Holding, which he shared the day before he wrote that post. So we can thank Zhao-tong for Zhao-tong perhaps for this Game Kyuubi post. And I wasn't really aware of Zhao-tong. Were you?
I didn't even know that was a thing. I'd never heard this side of the story before with the whole music stuff. I had no idea that even existed.
Did you know Austin Bitcoin Club had video, like streamed AMAs? He has a video. There's a video AMA with Zhao-tong from the Austin Bitcoin Club back in 2014.
Oh, wow.
And where is it's Goldstein. It's in the middle. If you go up to the middle, it's in the Zhao-tong and Zhao-tong.
Oh, the section. One in UT, you mean? Oh, the one that they did in UT.
Video AMA from 2014. It's right. You just scrolled past it. It's right there. Yeah. You just went over it with your mouse down. There you go. Third, fourth paragraph. Yeah,
that. This one here?
Yeah, that.
Yeah, it's probably the UT one, I would imagine.
11 years ago.
Oh, cool.
And that's Zhao-tong.
Interesting.
Yeah, I guess the crowd, they basically would just ask him.
Do you remember Google Plus? That was the thing. That's funny.
I know. Well, I still use Google Meet, actually, or Google Video or whatever it's called. Anyway, very cool.
It only has 130 views. That's wild.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Some of their other videos look like they had a decent crowd. It looked like it had tens of people in it, which is pretty good. Showing that Austin was popping as a Bitcoin place back then. But I'd never seen this. I mean, I never knew these videos existed or Austin Bitcoin Club was really a thing back then. But I also just didn't know, like,
no, it was some of this history. Austin Bitcoin Meetup.
Yeah, Meetup Club.
Yeah,
I'm less about names, but
25 subscribers. That's it.
Yeah, well, I think I stopped producing videos in like 2015.
Oh yeah.
But really cool. I should go back and watch some of those.
I love this. I love how he has the mask on, like right in front of the camera. It looks really cool. Yeah. Anyways, this is great. Scoresby with another one. Anything else? You see here?
Well, I think the excerpt from the Billy Joel interview, or I think it was one of the producers of one of Billy Joel's albums, gave an anecdote from an experience they had where Billy Joel was writing a song.
Mm-hmm.
And that was nice as well. Anyway, the post is great. I recommend reading it. It has a lot of facets to it. A lot that was new to me.
There's a post here by Scoresby. Said, this is cool. Didn't realize that Sailor's FUD tweet was the same day as Game Ubi's HODL post. So for the snackers that are listening, Michael Saylor is notorious for saying Bitcoin days are numbered back in 2013, right around when he was very bearish on Bitcoin. He said, Bitcoin days are numbered. It seems like just a matter of time before it suffers the same fate as online gambling. Wow, reading his own future. And then Bitcoin News quote retweeted, said Bitcoin is history is wild. The birth of the HODL meme and Michael Saylor's new iconic Bitcoin FUD tweet both happened on this day, December 18th, exactly 12 years ago. Damn.
Kind of crazy. They happened on the same day. Maybe Michael Saylor's game Kyuubi. And he was just.
That was him in that mask.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't game Kyuubi. That was Zhao Tong's in the mask.
I don't know.
Game Kyuubi, I guess, did hang around Bitcoin, the Bitcoin scene for a bit. But I don't think they're really online as Game Kyuubi anymore.
Cool stuff. That was all the top stories this week. We're going to jump into Keon's top stories this week. We can go into Keon's. Your first top story was Squatting Amsterdam, episode 2, Breaking Into My House. This is from Bitcoin Graffiti. What's this, Keon?
Yeah, so this is the second. Yesterday, Bitcoin Graffiti shared the first episode to this. And I think they shared in some thread that they were part of a squatting community in Amsterdam. And then a bunch of stackers were like, what? What is that about? What is going on there? Or he teased it, I think, in some drawing he did, because Bitcoin Graffiti will share pen drawings and stuff in the art territory. A bunch of people wanted to hear about it. So he shared the background on it, which is now, I guess, now okay to share. It used to be very private because, you know, it was like kind of secret what they were doing. But it's been since made illegal to do squatting. Anyway, he shares the story of how he got in the squatting scene. And what that was like, and some of the rules behind the squatting scene. And that was in the first episode. The second episode covers the first flat he squatted in. So he was the one who initiated
the squat.
The squat.
He's like, other squatters come and squat with you, or is that?
Yeah, they do it as groups, big groups of 30 people. And they have a whole
squat.
Yeah, they have a whole procedure. Well, they help you break in, basically. They have a whole procedure where they meet up 30 people around the corner and they have all the things that they need. They have two people who are dedicated to opening doors. Everyone's ID and passport are collected so that they're not on them. So the cops show up. And then the 30 people are there to kind of keep the cops or neighbors away from interfering with them opening doors and getting set up. Because apparently what you have to do is you have to get in, you have to break through the doors. And then once you're inside, you have to put in a chair, a mattress, and I think one other item in order for you to be able to claim that you're inhabiting, you are like legally squatting this place. And so they'll get in, and I think they also barricade the door from the inside, so that the cops can't, like, no one can come in and force them out. Mm. And then at the end, once they're all set up and they're in there and everything is like to the law, like legally they are now the occupant of that residence, they call the cops themselves. And then the cops document that they inhabit that unit now and meet all the requirements. And now they have like a legal claim to reside there, which is really interesting. I had no idea.
Do they pay utilities, or is it just, huh? Do they pay utilities?
I would guess they probably have to. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would guess they do, but they don't. They don't have to pay to live there, as far as I know.
That's crazy.
Because I think a lot of these squatting laws are premised on, you know, people not occupying a residence for over a year. So I think that's part of how they establish whether some place can be squatted, is they confirm that no one has been there for a year. And they're just like, there's someone who is like not using a great property or.
Yeah. I used to be neighbors here in Austin to a guy. He was like an old Austin hippie, but he was squatting at this lady's house who she let stay there. I forget what the arrangement was, but he was basically squatting in the backyard. And so on the east side, you know how the east side has like really long backyards, and yeah, some people will build another condo back there or whatever, a separate house. Well, this one didn't have that. It was just the house in the front and then all that whole area in the back. And I remember, because we used to talk to him all the time, and he was like, he would tell us like he was like squatting in that backyard, and the police would come. I remember seeing him one time, and they couldn't do anything to him because he was squatting in the backyard. Wow. I think that's a thing too in Austin, or maybe it was a thing in like the 2010s or whatever. But I remember that was the only time I ever saw somebody. But I didn't know what his arrangement was, because she couldn't forcibly kick him out.
I think if someone, everywhere squatting laws are different. And I think a lot of these laws were put in place back when there were like Dust Bowl towns and stuff where people would just completely desert them and like no one cared about them anymore. And they needed legal rights for the people who showed up in their place. And I don't think any of those laws got updated. Then modern people have kind of taken the opportunity or seized the opportunity and tried to occupy these places. But it is, it's an interesting situation. It sounds like the place they were squatting in, that seems pretty legit. Like the person hasn't been there for a number of years. They're not really keeping it up, and they kind of took it over and
made good use of it. There's a ton of those kind of houses in like middle America, right? And like every town that's kind of gone bust as far as like jobs and stuff, there's all those houses. I know when I drive down to Corpus, like it's just like you pass through a lot of these smaller towns and you drive into those towns and there's just tons of houses that are just like vacant. So
I think it's probably quite a bit less common in like city centers.
Yeah,
like this, like it sounds like this is a really nice place to live, and people who own real estate there and that aren't occupying it are most likely doing it as like an investment that they're holding, which is crappy for local residents because it increases the rent, reduces the housing supply.
That's wild. I didn't know that was a thing in Amsterdam.
Oh, it's so cool. I just love the detail. I would never, I mean, you know, you could have someone say they once squatted, but we know exactly how it worked. And
it was like those people, they made a documentary. I'd have to look for it, but there was a documentary about some people here, let me see if I can find it. It was like a shopping center, or no, it was the mall. And then they squatted and made a mall. Let me see if I can find it. Yes, secret mall apartment. It was this one. So, let me see if I can share this one here. Let me go here and share it real quick. So it was this movie where they talk about like squatting in like this kind of mall that they were doing construction still in. And then like these group of people come in there and then they just like set up and they live there. And so they build like an apartment, kind of like what you said is like very similar, but this happened in Rhode Island, I guess. So yeah, but like, see how they come in, and it's a whole documentary on it, but it was pretty popular. I think it was last year I heard about it.
That's pretty fun. Rhode Island is pretty posh, so it's not, you know, it's probably the type of squatting that other posh people would cheer on.
But look, like you said, they're just like all, they're like climbing in through these things just to get to their squat position. And then they have to like go past security and stuff like that. Anyways.
Yeah. I think that's pretty fun.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see a documentary on this too. That'd be interesting.
Something I could totally imagine myself doing
in another life,
my early 20s.
Yeah. The next story that you had was vision, dedication, and love fixes this in Bitcoin. This is from Dagny 761. What's this, Kian?
Yeah, so Dagny is Jason B's other half, and she tells the side of South Africa that she saw. So for the last couple of weeks, Jason B has been sharing stories about his time in South Africa and trying to, you know, participate in the Bitcoin community. They're trying to help them get miners attached to their growing solar installs. And his wife, with Nim Dagny here, spent a lot of time homeschooling the kids. But adjacent to, or some of the kids, I think the older kids were participating in this after school surf program. I think it might be called Surfer Kids. But it's a local nonprofit in South Africa that takes, I think, troubled youths or just youths in general. I'm not exactly sure the conditions, but they teach them how to surf. They teach them how to skateboard. They teach them how to take care of the equipment, and she details like kind of the whole experience and, you know, what she learned from it and how to raise her kids and how like self-perpetuating it is. I guess a lot of the instructors used to be students, in the surf program. And I guess, and a lot of them get pretty good and they're winning competitions. And I guess it's adjacent to Bitcoin Akasi. So Bitcoin Akasi, I think, has some, plays some role in, I guess, keeping this entity going, and they have a lot of plans for it. I don't know. She was just, it seemed like she was really impressed and like grateful for it existing and how much good it seemed to be doing. It was just a really touching.
Yeah. It sounds like a really cool community.
Yeah. There's a, I guess that's the language of South Africa's Isihusa. Hamba Gathando means walk, go with love.
Mm.
But really cool.
Really cool. Nice. The next one, I guess, you'd have another one after that. Let's jump into my post real quick. The first one I want to share was, did an early days with Lynn and Israel. I don't know if you ever met them before. Probably not, right?
No, they look too normal. Like I would be afraid to talk to them.
But they came on early days, and we talked about a lot of stuff, like the kind of like the TradFi into Bitcoin, the venture capital in Bitcoin, like what they're seeing as far as like startups in like Latin America and all that kind of stuff. And we even talked about like the startup ecosystem here in Austin and other places in America. It was a great podcast. I definitely enjoyed chatting with them. They have a lot of experience over the years, I guess over the decades, working with startups and stuff like that. And just really friendly people, really, really friendly people in the Bitcoin space.
They're based out of Mexico?
He's based out of Miami.
Okay.
And then she's based out of Mexico City, I believe. Yeah.
Okay, cool. But,
We all run in the similar like friend circles. Yeah. Anyways, check it out. And then the other thing I wanted to share was TabConf's 2026 Bitcoin Open Source Software Challenge. So TabConf is working with Chaincode Labs on doing this kind of like a cohort on months 2 and 3. But the first month, you're going to be participating with Chaincode Labs to go through their boss program. And right now the applications are open, but they're supposed to be closing here in like 12 days. So Keon, you've taken the Chaincode Labs.
I have done Chaincode Labs quite a few years ago. It's changed quite a bit. From what I understand, they've learned a lot and they've made it even better. It was already great. It was more of like a kind of like a college course type of environment when I took it. It sounds like I think I asked Jonas why they changed the format. And I think he said that they noticed that after they had people through their Chaincode seminars, that some of them didn't go on to contribute to open source. And so this new course is geared towards more hands-on learning and getting them actually contributing already, so that when they leave, they're like ready to do it. It's easy for them to chip in. Yeah, I'd highly recommend doing this. Great bunches of people, both on the TabConf side and the Chaincode side. It probably can't deal with better, more well-intentioned Bitcoiners.
Yeah, for sure. And then also the really cool thing is like the first month you'll be working with Chaincode, and then the second month and third month, TabConf will help you get assigned to an open source project. And then they have a Discord now too, so definitely check it out. The other thing I wanted to mention was this one, just because I think it's all over the place and everybody's talking about it. But Scoresby posted this: should Bitcoiners play the appeasement game with the quantum FUD people? Then he goes into some posts that were shared on X. Have you looked into the quantum stuff, Keon?
It's like most of it's over my head. There are people that I kind of outsource my trust to other developers who I think have a good handle on it. I think it's worth paying attention to and not completely disregarding. But as far as I can tell, we're still you know, half a decade away from there being a pressing issue. But we want to be prepared, and it seems like we have good things in place. That's my take on it. I didn't pay attention to this.
It's a lot of stuff going on Twitter. They're just like back and forth, and it's the same cast of people saying things. But I think the Scoresby did post this one by James O'Byrne. He said, anyone pushing the quantum narrative is knowingly or not participating in a pretty nefarious raid on Bitcoin. It's bedrock deep FUD that even smart laymen can't falsify, and it may lead to the adoption of weak novel crypto within the world's most valuable digital bear asset. Which I thought was interesting that he said the same thing that we were kind of bringing up like 2 weeks ago about the DJ Bernstein. Remember that guy?
Mm-hmm.
And now he kind of called this out on the stuff that he's trying to do. And I think it kind of just kind of goes to the what James was at least hinting to about the you know, the weak cryptography side of things. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I don't think cryptography, I think, is just one of those things you don't want to rush. So maybe it's worth rushing if quantum computing is really here and it's going to start breaking stuff that's old, but otherwise you kind of want to play it safe. Because there are all of these incentives and weirdness. You can't kind of trust everyone involved.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. The other one I think that's all of them. That's all my posts. It's all Keon's posts. Let's jump into, should we go into, let's just go to some AI Bitcoin stuff. So did you see this one? So this one's called Adventures in Extreme Vibe Coding. This was from Still Stacking After All These Years. And this post was fascinating. It's about this guy who loves his Chinese food restaurant that he usually orders from. And turns out they got hit with a health violation. So he was kind of upset about that. Instead of, you know, going to another Chinese restaurant, he said, no, Coop, I'm going to find out what happened here. And so he started vibe coding, or actually he went to the Florida's Department of Business and Professional Regulation website, and he found like this data that he could download, and he downloaded it via CSV. He fed it to an LLM, and then he started working. But it turns out he was an engineer. He's not like a developer, but he said it didn't matter because he was vibe coding. He gets to the point where he talks about it here. He said, over the next several weeks, what started as a single question metasized into something far larger than I had any business building. He basically realized that LLMs don't just fail loudly, they degrade quietly. And he had this really great insight that I thought, and I've shared it here. Yeah, he said, vibe coding is what happens when you don't actually know how to build something, but you know what the outcome should look like, and you refuse to stop asking questions until the shape emerges. And by the end, he says he stops vibe coding. But he said he's probably just going to go back and self-reflect on all this stuff. You got any thoughts on this?
I don't, you know, so I might, well, I have a few, but one of them is like, okay, so this, you know, your first big attempt at vibe coding failed. So what, most people don't succeed at their first big attempt at anything. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is like, so I think I'll suspect we'll get better at vibe coding as time goes on and learn more about coding and what it needs to do and when it needs to interject and what it needs to prompt or whatever. And so, you know, not that I think vibe coding is foolproof, but that's one thing I'd say. And then what was the other thing that he,
the Chinese food, do you think,
Oh, I didn't have anything to say about the Chinese food.
I mean, it was probably a really great Chinese restaurant, you know.
Oh, it must have been to inspire.
It was a mainland Chinese bistro in Coral Springs.
Yeah. A bistro? That sounds fancy. And I think that's like European, so it's like Chinese.
Probably some really good noodles.
Influence, you know, by European. Probably good. Probably pretty good. But, yeah, I haven't done... The guys in the lab here have done a lot more than this than I have, but where they kind of really let an agent, you know, code its own thing. That I just don't. I think you have to learn how to put guardrails in the right place and how to give it what it needs to kind of progress in the right ways. And it's like a skill, entirely on its own.
Dude, we know people, and I won't say who, but we know people that just talk to their computer now and it vibe and it does everything for them. That's how locked down they got it now, where it's basically doing all the work and it's just speaking what it needs to get done.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting. So that's cool. That's kind of the elite level where you could be at, and then there's like this level where he's just like doesn't know anything. Just a man in search of food. It sounds like, and answers.
Yeah, I think it's like, it's like you kind of need to steer it. I think is what I've seen from people who communicate that they have quite a bit of success with vibe coding, is they like know when it gets like blocked or goes somewhere kind of strange, they know enough about the terrain, programming, technical problems, that they know how to steer it back to where it needs to go to make forward progress and be successful.
He did say that he started off using one particular LLM and then he quickly realized that that wasn't enough and you need to switch to other ones to verify what that one's doing. He talks about it in the post.
Oh, that's cool.
It. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a great post. Definitely check it out. I thought it was worth bringing up because we have a lot of people on Stacker News that use AI stuff. Optimism said, pretty good observation about the vibe breaking continuity. And he's then Winter Yeti said, oh yes, I've seen this a lot working in Java and LLMs. You start off fine, good beginner structure. However, once you start working on tweaks and pushing for detail, it forgets the original structure and creates whole new bugs. The Opto said, happens in all languages. I've seen it happen in Python and JavaScript too, even though those are the supposed languages of choice for LLMs today. Yeah. Pretty cool stuff. The next one that we had was this one. I didn't get to look at this one all the way, but it was a video reality test. Can AI-generated ASMR videos for VLMs and humans? This was from Optimism. Did you see this? So you have to identify which video is AI generated.
Oh, okay. So they did like a
which one do you quiz. Think?
Which one do I think is AI generated?
Yeah, I can tell right off the bat.
I think it's the middle one.
I think it's the far left one. Let's see. Oh, that's real. Wow. You said the middle one?
Yeah.
Oh wow, you got that right.
See.
Dang. That one's real.
It just looked too good. There were moments like frames of it that looked too good.
The other
like,
one looked really bad, so that's why I thought it was like,
no, terrible. They're good, dude.
And it's like, oh no, maybe that's just reality. Everything's bad.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's like oversteers towards like perfection, towards like, you know, like a still where a still is like a photo.
Yeah.
That you'd take.
I guess his knuckles kind of gave it away. He has like seven knuckles or something there. And then, yeah, so it keeps going and it talks about the data analysis for it. And then there's some more tests down here. Yeah. Real or fake. Can you tell the difference?
Oh no.
I think the problem is just like seeing them side by side, but you can see here, the real one is the one on the far left because it's reality and it's not perfect. And then the Sora 2 is the one in the middle. I mean, and then the far right one, you can really tell with the water though. Like water's not that, I mean, it's not Avatar, you know, look, that's the kind of water you see at Avatar right there.
Yeah.
The right ones.
Yeah.
But in reality, it just looks like a.
There's more chaos to water than the ones on the middle and the right. Yeah.
And the intricate carving, the one on the left is real. Yeah. Those other two look real fake.
Yeah. There's like no impurities.
Same thing here with wood. The real ones, the fake ones. The one on the far right does look pretty good, though, on this one.
No, those lines are pretty straight.
Yeah. Yeah, yellow's not that bright.
It has, like, an ombre effect. That doesn't seem...
Yeah. And then the tomato slicing. Can you tell?
Okay.
Yeah, tomatoes aren't that hard to cut through, though.
They are if you don't have a sharp knife or a serrated knife.
But it would flatten, though.
Yeah, it would squish. These are tough.
And you can tell the far left one because his finger. I mean, I feel like with the humans, like, you can tell their fingers aren't normal. Right?
Yeah, I would guess fingers are...
dead giveaway.
Are kind of harder to do.
Yeah. Anyways, thought it was a really interesting post on, can our eyes just really see this stuff?
Yeah, and this is, you know, this is as bad as it's going to be.
Yeah.
Unless they run out of all the money that they have. Can't pay for the energy. More. Yeah.
The next one is, that was sarcasm. The next one is Wumble's Picks. Let's jump into Wumble's Picks. The first one is Chinese billionaires are having dozens of U.S. babies via surrogacy. That's from Simple Snacker, 15 comments, 1807. Did you read about this one, Keon?
I did. Before Simple Snacker posted this, I had encountered this somewhere. But I guess what's happening is there are a lot of Chinese billionaires who are contracting with like surrogate agencies in the United States to impregnate lots of surrogate, like women who elect to have the children of other people for money. And some of them are, you know, having quite a few babies via this route. I forget exactly what the motivation or why they are going out of the United. Oh, because there are surrogacy laws. There are laws against this in China, so they have to do them in other countries. And I would guess they do them in anywhere where they accept this, but we do this in the United States. It's legal. And so they are going to these agencies and asking for, like, you know, 10 surrogate children. And I think it's like $50,000, or maybe it's like $100,000 a kid, $50,000 of it ends up with a surrogate. And I think the agency for placing them, for doing all the middlemaning, gets the other half. But yeah, some people are kind of...
we're not Costco.
I forget what...
It's funny.
Oh, no, the guy wanted a discount, I think is what ended up happening. He's like, he wanted like a bulk discount. He's like, I'm getting this many surrogates from you. Can I get this for a little cheaper? And she's like, dude, what is wrong with you? And then it covers like some of them having buyer's remorse.
What do you mean buyer's remorse?
Well, like, you know, you buy five children and maybe you realize that's more children than you wanted. That's buyer's remorse. Like, you maybe you didn't want one at all. Maybe you just had, you had a moment, you know, you were like underslept, you're on the internet, and there's like there's a website you land on where you could buy children, and you bought more than you wanted, or, you know, you didn't actually want to raise a child. You just kind of, in that moment, you wanted to buy one. But kind of wild, pretty wild. You know, you would hope
the high quality sons. It's wild.
Yeah, I don't. I was really. There was a documentary.
Are all these surrogated kids?
Probably.
Gosh, dude.
Yeah, and I think they pair up. They like get the. They get the eggs of, you know, like models, and they pair their own DNA with it and stuff. I think they do stuff like that.
I knew one guy when I used to do IT. He had a he didn't have a surrogate, but he did a, what do you call that when you he wanted twins. He wanted twin girls. So what they did is they went to like a thing and then they like put that in his wife's whatever. And then like out came the twins. And then he told us this after I had met the kids. And I remember thinking, I was like, those kids are kind of odd. But I didn't know, like, instinctively, I was like, oh, they seem kind of odd. But I didn't know why.
Because they were twins or?
No, because I just thought they were just kind of odd. There was something off by them. And it was just more instinctual. But then, like, afterwards, like, I think it was probably like 3 weeks later, he was like, it was when we were like in IT. He was just like in our little group. And he was just like talking, and then we were talking about something. And then that's when he said what I just said. And I was just like, oh, that makes a lot of sense now. But I didn't say anything because that's right.
Most people have an instinctual feeling about twins in general, like identical twins. Me. Oh, I haven't met many identical twins in my life.
Yeah. But he wanted that. He was telling us a little story. I remember thinking, like, oh wow, I did have like a weird feeling about these kids. Like when I met them the first time, they just didn't seem like, you know,
like of this earth type of thing.
No, I'm sure they're fine.
I don't know. I just wonder
But like, did you see this one?
So that's a weird. That's kind of a, that's kind of, that seems kind of strange to go out of your way to have twins.
He was that kind of guy. He was like in the military and stuff. He,
that's interesting. That's kind of that's kind of cool. I don't like it, or you know, like to have.
Well, he had a wife though.
I know, but his wife probably. His wife
was
on
board with it. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's like kind of cool. They aligned on.
But he was one of those guys that got everything he wanted. Like I remember, like because he didn't work with us that long, and then he got another job somewhere else. But he was one of those guys that would say, "I'm going to do this, and then do this, and then do this," and then he would just do it. Mm. And it was just very much like just matter of fact.
That's cool.
So
just a man in charge wants twin girls.
I mean, that's what he specific. Wanted. So,
but I wonder how they had the twin girls feel about it though. Cause I know
I don't
some
think
twins,
they knew. Like, they probably don't know.
They probably know eventually. Like, a lot of twins don't like being twins.
When they get older. But even Elon Musk is doing this. Look,
that's intentionally having twins.
That's from Donald Trump right there. He was a surrogate.
Wait, what?
No, I'm just kidding. No, he's like, yeah, he's intentionally doing the same thing with.
Well, he's trying to have a lot of kids
with women. Yeah.
But that's not the same as having twins.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the twins. I'm saying the same thing as other billionaires are doing in China.
It's no, I was going to say before there was a documentary about men who go around to sperm banks and just give out an abundance of spooge, like all around everywhere, and just keep donating and keep donating and keep donating to the point where they have hundreds of children.
I feel like you're going to get me down to talk about something I don't want to talk about. But
it's so interesting. And there's a guy, I guess the guy from Telegram, the founder of Telegram, he also does this.
All right, Stackers, if you're listening, this is for the men. Women, close your ears.
Get ready.
Our seed, your seed is very important. Like, very important.
I don't know about mine, but.
Like, you talk about rabbit holes. I went down this rabbit hole. We talk about it sometimes. We don't have to share all of it, Keon. So, but I will say, like, dude, conserve your seed, man.
Oh, you're talking about retention.
I'm talking about conserving your seed. Like, you can't just be out there just giving out your seed to everybody.
Is that what it looks like?
No, but I'm saying even having that self-discipline to not do that as well too is also important, because that's something that helps your creativity. It helps your spinal cord. It, like, if you look into it, like the seed that you have as a man, it can produce life, man.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying. It's very important.
The brain has gray matter.
So don't just give it to a sperm bank. That's diluting your
keep your white matter too.
Your seed.
Right. No, yeah, but I don't know. It's like a Genghis Khan syndrome. Like, what? I can, like, the guys who,
oh, this, the Chinese billionaires,
there's, I think, a little bit, not I didn't mean this racially, but like, even for like the Telegram founder or any of the guys who like donate a lot, like Elon Musk, I think there is like a little bit of like part of Elon Musk is concerned about the population, and I buy that. But I think it just feels good to have copies of yourself everywhere.
I think he's just playing the odds, right? Like, he's just saying that one of these has to run my company one day. And he'd have,
that's
like,
part of,
I think that's what he's doing. Like Elon Musk, especially, I don't know about these other billionaires, but I would imagine Elon Musk is looking for somebody to pass the baton to.
I must feel like I feel like he isn't that kind of like nepotistic type of billionaire. It seems like he, I don't imagine he runs his, it doesn't seem like he runs his companies like they're an empire. It seems like he's just destroying himself by running.
I would think so. I mean, all the other billionaires have done that, whether it was Ford or like even the Waltons.
I feel like a lot of them are not like, I feel like Elon is like a weirder one where it's like a sort of self-sacrifice type.
Maybe he's trying to go to Mars and just leave his kids there, just dump them there to start population.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe he wants to start a whole new race, a whole new alien race. Come back, time travel. Anyway, but
anyways,
I guess that's also part of the motivation for the Chinese billionaires.
Oh, so
was to continue their empire.
So Wumble did have a question here. He said, a real issue or non-issue for the USA?
Oh, for Chinese billionaires to be like occupying all these wombs, like with their own seed.
I don't, he really didn't go into detail. He just said real issue
or USA, non-issue USDA grade. American seed.
Do you think it's a real issue or non-issue for the USA?
I don't know. Is there a womb shortage? Like, is it like housing supply issues? Is it like a NIMBY thing? What is going on? Like, I suspect it's not much of an issue. Maybe it drives up the price a little bit. I mean, you would hope that a lot of people that are getting surrogates either, you know, they have like a medical need for them, or, you know, some other reason to need them other than they want an 11th child, to be raised by a nanny. That's what you would kind of hope, but otherwise, I don't really know why it's much of it.
I think it could be a real issue in America if it catches on and people start doing that here. I think that's a real issue. You lose all sorts of family dynamics with that. You import that kind of thinking here.
I see. I could.
That's the only thing I can see. Just answering the question that Wumble had.
Yeah. If you're abusing your access to surrogates, I could see that becoming a problem, like culturally being a problem. But I also, I think it just makes sense for some people where the woman doesn't want to carry the child for whatever reason or can't. And, that seems, I'm glad it's legal. I'm glad people have access to that without having to do weird things.
Yeah. The other Wumble's picks that he had was doubt about private channels. This is in the Bitcoin beginners territory. 3 comments, 110 sats. Keon, what do you think of this? What do you think about this?
Yeah, so it looks like someone with the NIM 3 ending 3B has a private channel and they're wondering how it works when they receive sats and whether they need to have the person who's paying them needs to have a private channel or what needs, like, do they need to have a direct channel with whoever is paying them? And the main thing to know about private channels, private Lightning nodes, is the sense in which they're private is that you don't announce that your node exists to the rest of the network. So if I'm running another node that's independent of your node, and your node is you only have private channels, you don't announce your channels to me. I'm not aware that your channel exists. So when you request payment from me, I don't know even where you are on the network. I don't know who your channel partners are. I don't know how to get money to you. So that's like kind of the, I guess, the nature of a private channel. But a lot of people have private channels. Most mobile nodes actually, Finx, if you're using Finx on mobile, you have a private channel directly with Async, Phoenix's LSP. And
you said Sphinx, you mean Phoenix,
right? Phoenix, I'm sorry. Yep. That was 2020 brain slip. When you request payments to your Phoenix wallet, what you in the invoice, you communicate that the payer should send money to Async, Phoenix's LSP. And then Phoenix's LSP knows how to get the rest of the payment the rest of the way, that last mile to you on your private channel. And so that's basically what is going on. Darthcoin communicates that you can create a key send. The person paying you can create a key send, perhaps if you give them the hints of how to get to your node. But I don't know exactly how you do that. It'd probably be somewhat of a manual process. But when you have private channels, by default, your node will create these routing hints, these hops that people will go through to pay you. And so it's actually not you shouldn't be concerned that you won't be able to get payments because your channels are private. You just won't route. People won't route through you. That's the main difference.
The other, you get a question too with this one. This is Wumble's question. What are private channels and should the pleb node operator consider doing private channels?
Okay. So we described what private channels are.
Right.
What should they do with private channels?
Or no, he said, Wumble's question was, should the pleb node operator consider doing private channels?
Well, it depends on why they're running the channel. If they want to route sats and earn quote unquote yield from routing other people's money through their node, then you should make those channels public. As far as I know, there's no way to otherwise get sats routed through you. But if you're looking to receive money and kind of don't want your node to be well known on the broader Lightning network, I think you should run a private channel. I think most the way they're using Lightning should probably only have private channels. There are other reasons to have private channels, like Stacker News's node has private channels with a few key nodes. Because we know a lot of our customers have accounts with those nodes, and we don't want other people in the Lightning Network using that liquidity when we want it, we kind of want it reserved for our customers and we want to know it's there. So that's like another reason to have private channels, at least one way that I found myself using them. But I think, yeah, read Darth Coin's guides if he hasn't already ordered you to do it.
Yeah. Good posts. Good Wumbles picks this week, too. One spicy one, one informative one. I think that's all the posts we have this week. We're going to jump into... Well, let's go to the zine first. So Pleb Poet dropped a zine right before the show. This one's called It's Frosty Holiday with Stacker News. Yeah. What do you think about this, Guillaume?
Pretty cool. Pleb Poet told me that she made a bunch of paper snowflakes, I think is what they're called, snow, whatever. And those are all featured in the zine. So you can see some handmade snow.
Oh, right there.
Yeah, there you go, on the back, right there. I guess there are other places where they appear where they're quite small and just kind of don't really appear as snowflakes, but she was proud enough to mention them. So I mentioned them to you. I haven't taken a look at this issue yet, but I think, there's a gift basket that someone shared on Agora that they're selling. Froster's release, which was shared last Friday.
Yeah, really cool stuff. If you want to check out the rest of it, definitely get yourself a zine. And yeah, really cool stuff. The other one was Meta. You had like two Meta things this week. One of them was a Stacker News release. What's this one, Keon?
Yeah, so we've been sort of teasing the editor for a bit. We thought it would be done about it. Or we planned on having it done about a month ago because it was basically, a feature complete about a month ago. And then we realized there was this one part of it that we wanted to redo. And so this this release primarily features that thing that we wanted to redo, which is where we convert Markdown into this WYSIWYG format. You can kind of imagine you have a Markdown document. You're trying to make it so that it looks like something on Google Docs looks like. And so that's what this release does. We basically replaced what was before a static preview with something that eventually you'll be capable of editing. And that's, kind of hidden. What did that? Oh, you clicked on that old post. And there were some of the posts this week, you can see some of the top posts had little bugs in them from some of this new release. But otherwise it's been pretty solid and pretty awesome. And it has a number of advantages despite being really powerful.
I saw this paperclip now. Now there's just an upload file now.
Yeah. We thought the other one was a little confusing. We decided a while ago, it took us a bit to get around to changing it, but the editor, it's like, he's made it look a lot the same, but otherwise it's completely new. And that's kind of how we plan to roll out the next stage. I think our next stage, we plan to add a Markdown toolbar to help you with Markdown. And then after that, we'll make the preview editable. And that will also have a toolbar. And it'll basically be sort of Google Docs-y, where you can just have rich text that you're editing. And then after that, we'll start adding new features that we've never had before, which Sox has already developed a number of those. And this release also has, I think, a few things we didn't have before. One of them is checkboxes, which aren't super helpful for us because like you have this edit window or you can't check them, but it could be useful for communicating something. I think another thing is our table of contents got a makeover and now is like collapsible. There are probably a few other things that made it into this release, but
really cool stuff. I remember seeing WYSIWYG editors like when Squarespace came out and using them. That must have been the early 2000s or whatever it was. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is interesting. This is an interesting way to make a post. And then everybody kind of adopted it. So I definitely think it's going to lead to more posts probably, just because it'd be a lot easier to get your creativeness out.
Yeah, but hopefully easier for people to express themselves. They don't feel like they have to learn another markup language to do it. Yeah, it should be cool. And without, I think I think it was 2 years ago, we did this little beta and I just got scorched in the comment section where people are like, don't do this. Absolutely not.
So this one?
That one. Yeah. And I worked on it for 2 weeks and it still sucked hard enough.
I remember that. I think I don't see a screen.
Yeah.
Is there a screenshot in there? Maybe?
There we go. There's some screenshots.
Yeah. Out. I remember this.
Yeah. We had some toolbars and then
this is rich text, right?
Yeah. And this is me attempting to like do what Sox perfected in this release, where you take the rich text, you convert it to Markdown, you try to convert it back to rich text. It was extremely unreliable. And that's what, Sox ran into the same issue. And then we're like, okay, well, how would we solve this if we were, if we were experts, what would we do? And we figured out a way to do it. That someone who was specifically designing for this would do, and it works really well. And Sox made it really nice to be able for us to be able to extend it and make Sacker Newsy things with it.
2023, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, not actually. If you remove the wallet years from where we were working exclusively on wallet, it's only 6 months ago. So
yeah, pretty interesting. Wonder if we talked about it on Stacker News Live. I'm sure we did. And then the other one that I wanted to share was one that did you see what Jimmy posted right before the show? So Hacker News Honest Edition. So somebody made this website. It's basically where you click on this where it says, it says we broke the internet because nobody checks dependencies. And then you click on it. And then it takes you to that's a wrong example. Here, let me go back.
All
right, here it goes.
All it's doing is changing the titles.
Yeah, it's changing the titles. So Amazon finally adds a feature that has been standard since 2005. And then you click on it. And then it basically changes the title for the thing. I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, yeah, no, it's just it's taking all the Hacker News posts and their titles. It's like replicating Hacker News' front page. And it's making snarky titles in place of the normal.
Yeah, how to know when the cops are speed tramping you. And then this is designing a passive LiDAR detector device. I guess it's in a way it's kind of saying that it's how do I say it? It's kind of just being snarky a little bit.
Yeah, it's just a fun jokey thing.
Yeah.
Like how could you otherwise frame this content in a way that's sort of fun?
This one, politicians who can't use email try to ban the internet. And then it goes into legislation. Anyways, thought that was interesting. Interesting meta.
It is cool.
The other thing was, I think that's it. I think that's all the posts that we had today. Let's jump into Top Cowboys. Baby. The most popular segment in Bitcoin that everybody, I think there was a fight over the weekend. Wasn't there a fight over the weekend with Darthcoin and Blockchain Boog arguing about the Top Cowboys or something?
I don't know. I wasn't in that fight.
It was in the saloon. It was for everybody to see.
All fights happen in a saloon car.
Yeah, but it was pretty bad. It got out of hand a little bit. It went like five pages deep or whatever. Anyways, I feel like somebody unmasked here, didn't they? Was it We All Satoshi unmasked?
They
changed here.
They might have.
Yeah.
It does look like there might have been.
Crypto Sensei too.
Yeah, I don't recall Crypto Sensei being that high, but they're pretty high up there.
People unmasked here. Unmasking right before Christmas.
Yeah, but looks number pretty one stable.
Still in hiding though. We don't know who that is. It's not Coop.
It's a great mystery.
Someday. I have an idea of who it is, but it's either, I think it's, have it down to two people. Well, actually three. We'll never know.
I guess not. I think sometimes they unhat themselves or they hat themselves and they show.
That's interesting. We got Public Enemy number 12, Coins Reporter number 15, Simple Stacker 16.
Still stack.
Wumble 17. Oh, wow. Wumble's coming up. Look at that.
Oh, you're right.
Dang. Got Put Poet number 23. Real Bitcoin Donkey. Haven't seen in a while.
They're posting their health and fitness. Yeah, the pounds are coming back on a little bit. They're climbing back up. They gotta get shredded again.
0x Bitcoiner 33. End of the mic 35. We got Nout down there at 38. Bell Curve 39. Are you surprised no one has really changed their profile pictures?
Not really. I would guess most of them haven't even noticed because you don't really see profile pictures on Stacker News unless you go visit your profile or you're on mobile. Yeah. So I guess that's what
we have socks at 47 socks.
Or it's just very traumatic for them to lose their profile.
Yeah, even Jimmy Song hasn't changed his profile picture. Or Evan. That's interesting. Shocknet at 74. And the last one is 02834. Number 83. Interesting. Yeah. And that's the top Cowboys this week. Let's jump into, where is it at? Oh, man, I lost it. Oh, there it goes. Let's jump into YouTube comments. This week we had one from, why do Gen Z have a growing appetite for retro tech? And this might be coming from a Gen Z can. I don't know if you can read that, but he says, he agrees with me, basically.
Oh, is that what you said? Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yep. He said, modern tech does it explain to you that you don't own it? Netflix takes away the TV shows you're watching, game companies shut down servers that you're playing, Microsoft forces updates you say no to. Retro tech does none of that. If you buy it, you own it. It doesn't record your conversation. It doesn't force ads on you. Well, some Blu-rays do. I had to sit through a couple ads on a Blu-ray the other day.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Like trailers or
no,
real ads?
No, it was just like, it was on the Fast and Furious Blu-ray. It's kind of a bummer. Wow. Anyways, other than that, I mean, it's fine. Because you can't skip it either. Comparatively speaking.
Doxy on a Fast and Furious on Blu-ray.
Dude, it was Fast and Furious kind of day. I was talking about it, like, because there's a scene. There's a scene where he literally, let me see if I can find it.
Which days are Fast and Furious days? That's what I want to know. What mood should I be looking for a Fast and Furious?
Look, so it's this scene right here. Like, so this scene in Fast and Furious.
We're going to get taken down.
I can't do it. Anyway, there's this whole scene where he's like, they get in a Lamborghini or whatever. And then they're in a skyscraper. And then they're like jumping skyscrapers. And then it's Paul Walker's last one. And he goes, cars don't fly, Dom. And Dom's like, watch this, bro. Hold my beer. And he jumps over the skyscraper. And you think one's enough? No, he goes for the second one.
Two skyscrapers.
Anyways.
Holy crap, dude.
Yeah, you only get that on Blu-ray.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, they did turn into like the Avengers with cars. Like that's basically.
They go to space.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're making another one. They should. They should just finish off the, because it left with a cliffhanger. I don't know if you know this, but
the only way it can go is like
X left with a cliffhanger.
They like, so it becomes like Back to the Future, where they like
turn, oh, they go back in time.
Yeah, they turn their car into like a time traveling car.
Yeah, I feel like they could just do like a, you know, just like
go back to the roots.
No, not even that. I feel like they could just do like a show. It should just be a show, like Fast and Furious, a show or something, like a Netflix show or something. I mean, they have the budget.
Yeah, I just like, I think what I liked about the first movie, and I think what most people liked about the first movie, was the like underground car culture. Yeah. Like that was like cool, but then it just turned into like,
yeah, I think that's more Vin Diesel than anything. Like he's like trying to make it big. Familia. Yeah. That's the whole thing of the movie. It's about,
is he like an important, is he making a lot of decisions, you know, behind the scenes?
I think he does make a lot of decisions behind the scenes from what I've read.
Okay.
Anyways. But yeah, he's right. What do you think about this? What do you think about this guy who or lady said, you know?
I definitely agree that you own stuff that you own. But I think there are trade-offs being made when you have to carry around a DVD collection and that kind of stuff. And maybe you'd rather not own something and not have to carry around a DVD collection.
They're pretty cheap. They're like 50 cents nowadays. The next one was from, we got the Fountain Comments Zap, Stay in Your Lane, and then Undisciplined says, Challenge Accepted, Car. What do we agree to? What challenge was that?
I don't know. I think you guys are going to arm wrestle.
I don't remember. Challenge Accepted. Was this the one where you're ripping them on the podcast? Is it that one?
December 16th. I don't think I ripped him. He's challenging you. He didn't even mention me.
He said, oh, was this the one where we were going to swap places? We're going to swap shows?
Oh, I think so. I think that's what you said.
I'm down. Let us know when's a good one for y'all. We'll cover Stacker Sports. I'll cover Stacker News Live. Yeah, it would be kind of funny. Or maybe we just start off by inviting them on the show first, and then they, you know, maybe they can do it. Maybe Undisciplined can come on and be a special guest. But he doesn't show his face, though, so we need an avatar for him or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways,
get him a mask.
That's all we got this week. Keon, what are you doing this weekend?
Oh boy, I think I'm actually going to set up my office this week. I haven't done it.
Oh really?
Yeah, it's just everything is still out of boxes, but not anywhere. So I think I might have the time this weekend finally, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
not sitting in a mess every day.
Yeah, it is way on you after a while. Like yeah. me and Austin cleaned up our whole side over here, so it looks way better now.
Yeah.
Definitely get more work done this way.
Exactly. There's like nothing, it feels like you got things off your to-do list and you're kind of free. So I don't have that feeling right now, but yeah, that's what I plan on doing. That's my exciting weekend. How about you, Carr?
I'm going to, tomorrow, we're like, remember I was telling you my cousin's, stepdad passed away maybe
almost a month ago.
Yeah.
And so
they're going to do his ashes tomorrow. So I got to do that tomorrow morning. I don't know how long that's going to be, but I'll do that on Saturday. And then church probably on Sunday. So it's going to be a very somber weekend, I would imagine. Probably going to be hanging out with my cousins all weekend because of all that stuff. But it took forever for them to give him the ashes, because apparently nowadays you have to be clear all sorts of things or whatever, like
paperwork and stuff.
Well, it wasn't even that. Like my cousin was telling me that they had to verify that it was him, and social security number was out and all that stuff. Because I guess you could steal identities and stuff like that.
Oh, do you think you guys got racially profiled?
No, I think it's a very common name.
Oh, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, so they just wanted it, because there's not a dead body that you can go to and
verify it later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it kind of makes sense.
Where are you guys spreading the ashes, or how is that?
I don't know if I should say, because it's what if somebody shows up and then...
Oh, I didn't realize it was a physical... I thought it was the ocean or in a field.
Oh, no, it's here in town.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you next week. Okay. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. I've never done one of these before, because we usually, in my family or my side of the family, usually bury everybody. But yeah, it's the first time I've ever been a part of something like this, but it'll be different. Anyways, outside of that, just work probably. Some more work.
Work.
Yeah. Cool. Stackers, have yourself a great weekend. And then is it Christmas before... When's Christmas time? Is it right before, is it Wednesday or Thursday?
I don't know. What if it's Friday?
Let me check real quick.
Stacker News. It's Christmas.
I feel like it's Thursday.
Thursday would make some sense.
It's Thursday. Let me see here. Yeah, it is Thursday. So yeah, I guess we will. Merry Christmas, Stackers. And I guess we'll do it on the 26th. So we'll do it the day after Christmas.
Boxing Day Stacker News Live.
Yeah. Cool. Keon.
Zap.